This is Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret.
60 years ago this weekend, organizers started a bus boycott in Montgomery, Alabama over segregation policies on the public transit system. The event was triggered by the arrest of Rosa Parks on December 1st when she refused a bus driver's order for black passengers to give up their seats and move to the back of the bus.
Will Jones joins us now for a look at the movement behind the boycott and its place in history. He's a professor of history at UW-Madison and author of The March on Washington, Jobs, Freedom, and the Forgotten History of Civil Rights. Will, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me back.
Well, at some point in my youth, I know I learned about these events, and the story was, and it often is told as though Rosa Parks, just this random tired woman who sparked this spontaneous movement. Can you tell us more, though, about the organization that went into those boycotts and how Rosa Parks fit into all of that?
Yeah, I mean, I think, interestingly, Rosa Parks is really kind of at the center of the myth, I think, around this event. The idea that she was just this tired, often seen as sort of a tired old woman. She actually wasn't very old at the time. And the idea that she really just didn't want to get up on the bus. She had worked a long day, which actually, you know, there's elements of truth to that. She said that she wasn't planning on starting that bus boycott that day, but that tiny part of it really misses a really fascinating long story in which she was actually a lifetime political activist by this time. She was very centrally involved in building the NAACP in Montgomery. And she was part of a group of activists who had been actively talking about and planning a bus boycott for years in response to the treatment, the brutality, particularly that black women faced on these buses in Montgomery. So she wasn't actually planning it that day, but she was planning for a very long time something like this, and this sort of sparked off something that was in the works.
And talk about the movement and the organizations and maybe some of the people who was involved in this long organizational effort that got sparked by that day's events.
Right. Well, as I said, Rosa Parks was an activist in the Montgomery branch of the NAACP. That was led by her and a man named E.D. Nixon. E.D. Nixon was a Pullman porter, and he was a member of a union, which was an all-black union. It was the largest all-black union in the country at the time. And through that union, he had got to know black activists all over the country, including the leader of that union, who was A. Philip Randolph, who was the principal nationally known civil rights leader at the time. Both Rosa Parks and E.D. Nixon in the 1940s had become very active in a national movement that A. Philip Randolph led to launch a March on Washington that was called off at the last minute and became the basis for the famous March on Washington in 1963. So they had also been involved in protesting voting rights restrictions. So they had led campaigns to protest restrictions on voter registration. So they were part of this very important NAACP branch, but there were other political organizations. Perhaps the second most important was the Women's Political Council, which was a group primarily of black women who were school teachers and college professors who were really the principal people in getting the word out to the broader community about the boycott. So they actually printed up pamphlets, thousands of copies of pamphlets, and handed it out to their members, who handed it out to their students, who brought them home to their parents. And that's really the principal way in which they spread news of the boycott.
The social media of the time, in a way. Now, this boycott lasted over a year. How did it keep going that long? It's one thing to start something like this, another to sustain it for that long.
That's right. Well, I think, you know, obviously having these organizations that were able to sustain the effort over a long period of time, other organizations were also built in the process. You know, there's really interesting ongoing research about this. Jean Theo Harris wrote a really great, fabulous biography of Rosa Parks detailing some of this. Danielle McGuire, who was a graduate student here at UW-Madison, wrote a really fascinating book that details some of this. Another historian, Pramila Nadison, has recently written about the role that domestic workers played in this boycott. she focuses on a woman named Georgia Gilmore, who actually built an organization of domestic workers to help raise money. These were extremely poor women, but they pooled their wages to raise money for things like food, for transportation. They have eventually put together an alternative transportation system that consisted primarily of cars that people could call and get rides to work if they wanted, if they needed. These sort of networks, these social networks, were put together in some ways building on longstanding networks, but also in the spur of the moment to sustain the protest.
Ultimately, the protests were successful. Courts ordered the desegregation of public transit there. Violent backlash after that. Can you talk about some of what happened after victory?
Yeah, well, I mean, during the boycott, the mm-hmm. backlash was immediate. Almost immediately, Rosa Parks was fired from her job at a downtown department store. Edie Nixon and Martin Luther King, who became the leader of the movement, their houses were bombed repeatedly during the boycott. And then after the boycott, there was a rash of attacks on people who rode the buses and. This was throughout the South, this was a moment in which we saw the mobilization of the civil rights movement, which I think we're very familiar with, but also this backlash in the form of the Ku Klux Klan and the White Citizens Councils.
Talking to Will Jones, professor of history at UW-Madison, on the 60th anniversary this weekend of the Montgomery bus boycotts. And we're talking about this now, Will, 60 years later. This is one episode in a much wider civil rights movement, of course. Why do we look back on this one? Why do we look back on the bus boycott as such a significant pivotal moment that lasted over a year?
Well, I think for a number of reasons. I mean, this was a movement that gained national and international attention, in part because it was sustained for so long and was so effective. It was the movement that brought Martin Luther King into the national spotlight and really made him a movement. In some ways, people like Rosa Parks and Edie Nixon, Joanne Robinson, who headed the Women's Political Council, they really selected Martin Luther King to be their spokesperson. He was a young minister who was new to town. In some ways, they chose him because he wasn't involved in the sort of internal factions in the town. And so we remember this because this was the moment in which he rose to national stardom. It was also the first time in which the strategies of nonviolent civil disobedience were effectively put into place in a really sustained way to turn this to make this an effective movement.
Now, the bus boycott met its goals. It won. There were other civil rights victories, but 60 years later, we're still talking about issues of race, and we're still seeing protests, campuses, big cities in particular, around the country. Are there lessons, do you think, from the bus boycott that protesters might be learning today or should be paying attention to today?
Right. Well, I think in some ways, you know, while the boycott itself, it won in terms of a court decision in the state of Alabama, it really opened up a long-standing battle, really over the legality of legalized segregation that would continue through for the next 10 years until the Civil Rights Act of 1964 and the Voting Rights Act of 65. So in some ways, I think, and in many ways, the questions both about unequal treatment in public, about brutality, about these sort of interpersonal relationships that were really at the focus of this protest that Rosa Parks launched on the bus, I think stay with us today. So in some ways, I think one lesson is to think about this as part of an ongoing struggle. I think it's also important that we recognize that the sort of flashpoints like the boycott, like the marches, even like Rosa Parks's act of defiance, are really just the surface phenomenon that are underlaid by, in many ways, years and decades of organization and network building.
Do we, living now in the 21st century, have the patience for that kind of long-term organizing and network building when we can just have people meet up at a protest, say, on social media?
Well, I think we do have the patience. I think we've seen that. I mean, a lot of the organizations, the NAACP, certainly, that were that played an important role in that movement still are with us today, and people are still forming them and organizing them. I think we've seen the birth of new organizations here in Madison, Young Gifted and Black, an organization that was built, you know, in the spur of the moment, and in some ways, like the movements that emerged out of the boycott, you know, have the possibility to sustain a movement for a much longer period of time.
Will, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you.
We've been talking to Will Jones. He's professor of history at UW-Madison. He's author of the book, The March on Washington, Jobs, Freedom, and the Forgotten History of Civil Rights. We've been looking at the 60th anniversary this weekend of the Montgomery, Alabama bus boycott, viewed as a pivotal event in civil rights history here in the United States.
Coming up, a look at the power of sharing a meal on Food Friday. I'm Veronica Rickard.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Stick around. There's more to come here on Central Time on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.